Puls.
Ehrengäste.
Bei mir im Pulsstudio heute Keith und Chris von We Are Scientists. Guys, it's really nice to have you here.
Great to be here.
Yes, indeed.
Your new album, Megaplex, it came out in April, and I read that a lot of the songs on that album stem from this thing where you took part in a song challenge
right,
with
yeah.
other songwriters. Can you explain how that looked like?
The idea is that you're meant to write as many songs as possible in a single day and record them. The ideal number is 10, 10 songs in 10 hours. And at the end of the day, you all bring your recordings to a studio that we all hang out in and play one another all the songs at the end of the day. And most of them are quite bad, but they're always good ideas in all the songs. There's always something interesting, and it's mainly an excuse to drink beer together.
So it's like a book club.
That's sorts. Exactly what yeah. it is like. Yeah,
yeah.
Was that something you did for fun, or was the goal for you and the other musicians to get started on records that you were gonna release at some point?
It is mainly just for fun, and I think. Initially, the value of it was to take some of the preciousness away from writing, because it's pretty easy to, sit down and say, oh, I need to write an amazing single for our record right now. And if you don't, you feel terrible and you feel like you failed. And so sort of part of the idea of this is just, write anything. And sometimes it'll be bad and sometimes it'll be cool. And either way, you've done some work. And there's kind of value to everything that you do.
I feel like on this new album on Megaplex, you've kind of completely left the indie rock tag behind. That was kind of stuck on you for the first few records. I mean, you did that on the last album to an extent, but on Megaplex, I think it's kind of more pronounced in the name, the artwork, which is really colorful and striking, and the music. And I was wondering if that kind of reflects your listening habits of the last few years.
Does to some degree, although it seems like indie rock as a genre has also changed so that it doesn't really sound like what indie rock sounded like in the late 90s when we were kind of forming our adult music passions, I guess. So, if you listen to Spotify's, indie playlist, it's really poppy. It's just kind of like not expensively made pop songs.
Right.
That's all it seems to mean. And then you'll hear other stuff that sounds like late 90s indie rock, like golden era indie rock. And that just sounds nostalgic, I guess. So I think we still hear sometimes bands like that, but are kind of like, well, we already have, Pavement. Why would we listen to this? Right. not that we would ever begrudge anyone their nostalgia. We have our own sick nostalgic tendencies that we have to service as well. So
yeah, and there's worse bands to aspire to.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah, but I think we do listen to, along with the rest of the world, a lot of pretty poppy stuff these days.
My favorite song on the new album is Kit, which to me is like the power ballad of the album. I was hoping that you could maybe tell me something about where that song came from.
Yeah, that one changed a lot over the course of the record. It started out as just kind of a straightforward acoustic ballad song. And actually, for a while, we were talking about making half of this record just kind of straight up acoustic arrangements, like probably with drums, but being pretty stripped back and guitar oriented. And we gave up on that. pretty quickly. But that was one that my demo of it is just a vocal and a guitar. And I gave it to Chris and Max, our producer, and it sort of snowballed into, a Peter Gabriel style synth ballad.
I think the better metaphor is sprouted wings, Keith. It didn't snowball.
Like a snowball.
It sprouted wings.
Well, it just gained layers and layers. And got
it picked up weight and substance.
Exactly. Yeah.
Loving the is that like a fretless bass as well?
That's, it sure is a fretless bass. Oof.
And that's actually played by not by me, but by the bass player for Melissa Etheridge.
No way.
Which is Max's sort of day job right now. He's the touring keyboardist for Melissa Etheridge. And so he got this guy, Melissa Etheridge's bass player, to play on that track.
on his five-string fretless bass.
Fretless Ibanez,
When you went, ooh, was that in horror or enthusiasm?
In complete approval. I love that bit when the bass comes in on that song. And did he play on other songs on the record?
No, just that one. Just the one we needed some sweet fretless bass on. Exactly. And we don't even own a fretless bass. We're just like, it'll be faster. Get this guy to do it.
Get him to do it.
A friend of mine texted me 2 days ago, I think jokingly, but legitimately complaining about the fretless bass. Thinking he does not like the fretless bass, which only made me like it even more.
Don't you want to tell him who said that?
It was Tim Wheeler from the band Ash.
Yeah.
Quick note on the fretless bass.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah, he really did not like. In fact, he started it by giving me a compliment first and saying that he really loved the guitar solo in the song Notes in a Bottle, but then had to admit that he hates the fretless bass in KIT.
Also, I think like Kit together with Your Light Has Changed and No Weight at Five Leaves, that's like a really killer like trio on the album. I don't know how much thought you put into sequencing.
I feel like choosing the first song and the last song on the first side are always the two easiest.
Yeah.
And then it always kind of gets built out from there.
Built around there.
Do you still think in sides?
Foolishly, we do. I mean, we still make, vinyl. So we, in some ways, thinking about, how someone will listen to their Spotify playlist ruins the idea of a track listing altogether. Yeah. I think when I think about track listing, I do pointedly think about vinyl sides.
Yeah. It's funny, though. I think we grew up in a time when anyone who was listening to your record was committed enough to it that you could be sure they were going to get at least a couple tracks in. And so first track, like the first song on an album, would often be just sort of an intro.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't necessarily a single. In fact, I think it was probably kind of rare for it to be the big single. But nowadays there's a lot of pressure to just put your best thing right at the top.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people aren't going to listen. You get their attention for 5 seconds. So we do, I think we do track list differently than we would. You mentioned we still think in sides. We do, but we also don't think in the way that people used to think about how to track. I feel like I remember in the 90s that track three was kind of a sweet spot for a big song.
Although Nevermind kicks off with Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
That's how punk that
album
is. Yeah.
How could you not, though? I mean, I'm guessing even Kurt Cobain was like,
of course.
That should go first. I first got into We Are Scientists with your second album, with Love and Squalor, which was produced by a young Ariel Rechtheit, who one of the first things that he produced, actually, I think.
Pretty early.
And so you got him before he went on to, he produced Haim.
Yeah.
Before he was corrupted. Before his taste curdled.
Before he got sucked into the machine.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the recording process of that album? Because that has a really distinct and completely different sound to the new songs.
We recorded in a pretty busted studio in,
San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, a not particularly appealing part of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And in fact, while we were recording that record, we had to pause a few times because the computer at the studio kept breaking.
Yeah. I remember we lost at one point like a day and a half because the owner of the studio had to like buy the new version of Pro Tools because the old one just didn't work. And he wasn't going to charge us for those days, but Keith and I were sleeping on Ariel's couch.
Yeah.
Or were we staying with Greg Fishbein?
We
were staying with a friend of mine. We didn't live in LA. We lived in New York. We were away from our girlfriends and we were like, come on, let's get this done. But the whole recording process was about 2 weeks. Like it was pretty quick and dirty, got it mixed, and we really liked it. And then we ended up signing to Virgin, and they made us remix it with a much fancier mixer who cost more than the entire rest of the process.
Oh, yeah. By like four times.
Yeah. He did a great job. Yeah. Mark Needham, he did an excellent job. He had mixed Hot Fuss. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Killers record. He had just mixed that, and so everyone was like, this guy. And he did do a great job.
A few songs from that second album, We Are Scientists album, were on the playlist at my local indie disco, which I used to frequent. The Great Escape, obviously.
Yeah.
And you were, at the time, you were kind of associated with British indie rock, like Maxima Park, Art Brut, who you went on tour with, etc.
Yeah.
Was that where you felt at home at the time musically, or was that kind of, or did people think, oh, you know, that's a British band?
People definitely did think we were British for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely felt pretty at home there. I mean, we, you know, we got played on the radio there a lot and we spent a lot of time there. So I would say from 2005 to 2008, probably most of our friend bands were British.
Yeah.
Like the people we hung out with were all British guys.
Yeah. We had a label experience that I think kind of mirrored the larger audience experience, but that was kind of much more in our face because it was the people we were dealing with as business, where our UK office of Virgin Records loved us and really liked our sense of humor and were really excited about the music and were like, we're getting this on the radio, we're gonna make commercials with you guys, you're so funny, blah blah blah. And then whenever we'd meet with the New York office of Virgin, they were just like, oh, these freaking guys.
Yeah.
Oh, you idiots. And told us kind of point blank, like, there's not a place for this stuff in the U.S. right now. This won't be on the radio here.
They actually told us, because we had done a few tours with Arctic Monkeys, and the president of the label, of the U.S. label at that point, literally said to us, your friends, the Arctic Monkeys, don't mean doodly squad over here.
Yeah.
Like, great ear, dude. Great ear.
Jason Flom was his name.
Indeed. Yeah. He had a big Kid Rock poster on his wall.
He did. And he had done Whitesnake in the 80s. He's actually a great guy, it turns out. So I feel like we have to mention that. He's involved in this like falsely accused project and has apparently personally saved a bunch of people from death row in the United States. He goes, he has enough cred as a sort of label head that he can actually get an audience with district attorneys and with governors. And he's gotten a bunch of people off death row who shouldn't have been there. It's this amnesty project that he takes a big personal interest in.
Well, maybe he should work in law.
I guess my point is he has done, you know, he's done the necessary thing to make up for the awful crime that he perpetrated against We Are Scientists. And now I consider him, you know, to have expiated his sins.
We're square.
Yeah.
Okay. Score settled. Almost 8 years ago, you released Goal England, a football song in support of the English national football team for the World Cup that was on at the time in South Africa. That went well, obviously.
They lost to Germany.
Destroyed them. Yeah.
They lost to Germany.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you have a hunch on who's going to do it this year, or win the World Cup this year.
We back Germany, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, of course.
We would love to see the Germans take home the what do you get?
Rightful,
a belt? Is it a belt with a large buckle, like a golden buckle,
like a golden lollipop? Like,
yeah,
for everyone in the team.
Cool.
Well, thanks for that hot take on the upcoming football World Cup.
That thoroughly political choice. Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for dropping in. It was great to have you guys. We are scientists.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Wenn euch dieser Podcast gefallen hat, dann gefällt euch vielleicht auch
Puls Spezial.
Wir unterschreiben Online-Petitionen, liken die Posts von Greenpeace, kommentieren Videos von PETA. Schön und gut, aber...
Also ich bin skeptischer geworden, was Petitionen angeht etc., weil ich glaube, dass wenn man eine Kampagne nicht auf die Straße bringt, dann reicht das nicht, im Internet unterwegs zu sein.
Wie oft gehen wir eigentlich auf Demos, Podiumsdiskussionen oder engagieren uns ehrenamtlich?
Man darf nicht vergessen, die haben alle G8 und sind wahnsinnig unter Druck und müssen ganz schön viel arbeiten in der Schule. Und ich glaube, das ist so ein bisschen der Killer für freiwilliges sich engagieren.
Das Netz hat uns ganz schön faul gemacht, was politisches Engagement angeht.
Es ist schon einerseits gut, um sich in einem bestimmten Kreis zu einem bestimmten Thema auch zu informieren. Aber man muss eben auch mal rauskommen und man muss sich auch engagieren vor Ort, weil man lernt einfach die Realitäten, die Fakten anders einzuschätzen als in seiner virtuellen Blase.
Pulsreporter Ben Kanter geht raus und erkundet einen Monat lang das politische Real Life.
Es ist schon Wahnsinn mitzukriegen, wie einfach es eigentlich ist, sich auch ehrenamtlich einzubringen und einen tollen Beitrag zu leisten.
Machen statt liken. Was passiert, wenn wir selbst politisch aktiv werden? Puls Spezial und alle anderen Puls Podcasts findet ihr auf deinpuls.de und überall, wo es Podcasts gibt. Puls.